Welcome to the deep dive. So, you know, if you read all the old guard financial books, real estate is kind of painted as this ultimate path to wealth. It's tangible, reliable, you know.
The foundational asset.
Exactly. But then you jump onto any modern investment forum and you get this completely opposite story. People calling it the worst possible, investment slow, cumbersome, a giant anchor for your capital.
It's an incredibly polarized view, for sure.
It really is. Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission today is to cut through all that noise and figure out where the truth lies in that statement. Real estate is a bad investment.
And it's not a simple yes or no answer.
Not at all. It depends entirely on your goals, on market timing, and I think most importantly, how you actually invest in it. We're going to focus on the real, genuine shortcomings of that traditional hands-on model, and then explore how innovation is starting to fix those deep-seated flaws.
Yeah, and I think it's crucial to start by acknowledging that, look, when someone, especially a newer investor, calls real estate bad, they're not really talking about the building itself. Right? They're reacting to the sheer friction of the whole traditional process, the hoops you have to jump through. To understand their frustration, we really have to detail those practical challenges first.
Okay, so let's start right at the beginning of that journey. What's the biggest initial hurdle that makes people pause? Is it just the size of the loan, or is there more to it?
The loan is daunting, of course, but the primary barrier is the high upfront capital requirement. I mean, the sheer amount of cash you need right out of the gate, even with a mortgage.
So you mean the down payment and all the extra stuff?
Exactly. We're talking massive down payments, closing costs, legal fees, appraisal fees, and then all the local duties and taxes.
And these fees, you know, the taxes, the hidden duties, they're not recoverable, are they?
Not at all.
It's just straight capital drain before you've even seen a dollar of rent.
Precisely. You're sinking tens of thousands, maybe much more, just to get the keys. And that initial cost, it immediately limits who can even play the game. If you're a smaller investor, or you just don't want to tie up your entire portfolio in one single asset, traditional real estate is basically closed off to you. It's got an elite entry point.
Okay, so let's say you do manage to get all that capital together.
Yeah.
You buy the property. Now you need to know you can get that money back out, right? Especially in an emergency. Which brings us to the second huge problem, illiquidity.
Oh, illiquidity is such a major pain point. It just contrasts so sharply with, well, pretty much every other modern investment.
How so?
Think of it this way. Selling stocks is instant. You click a button, selling a house. It's like trying to sell a giant, complicated piece of furniture. You need inspectors, lawyers, agents.
A whole team.
A whole team. And then you have to wait for months, sometimes over a year in a slow market, just to find a qualified buyer who wants that exact thing.
So if I suddenly need, say, $100,000 for a medical emergency, my house is effectively useless for months.
It is. And if you get desperate and try to rush it, you almost always end up selling for way below market value, just for the speed. That lack of flexibility is just, it's profoundly restrictive in today's world.
We hear the term passive income all the time with rentals, but our sources are pretty clear that for traditional ownership, passive is not the right word.
Not even close. It quickly becomes very active, very stressful work. That's the third core challenge, maintenance and active management.
It's not passive at all.
When you own the actual bricks, you own every leaky tap, every burst pipe, every single tenant dispute. You're the emergency contact, the bookkeeper, the compliance officer. You're all of it.
I think one of our sources called it the 2 a.m. toilet call tax.
That's the perfect way to put it.
That moment your phone rings and your so-called passive income just turned into a highly active $5,000 problem.
It's the perfect analogy because it hits on both the money drain and the time drain. You've got routine maintenance, but also huge expenses like a new roof. You're dealing with difficult tenants, managing empty units, and all the while, local regulations are changing.
Yeah.
Investors who really underestimate that time commitment are the first ones to label the whole thing a bad investment. They just didn't budget for a demanding second job.
So if the hands-on challenges weren't enough, then we get to the market itself. You were saying that unrealistic expectations can really eat into any potential profit.
That's right. People often just assume property values go up in a straight line, but they're so heavily influenced by things you just can't control. We call it market risk.
Things like location, the local economy,
national interest rate policies, all of it.
So what happens when you mix those maintenance nightmares we just talked about with a shaky economy.
That's when you get massive risk, especially with leverage. Markets are cyclical. If you buy at the top of a boom, you could be underwater for years when things cool down.
And when you say buying with leverage, just to be clear for everyone, we're talking about taking on a big mortgage, right? A lot of debt.
Exactly. Which means if the value of your property drops 10%, that loss comes directly out of your small slice of equity. The bank still wants all its money back?
Ouch.
Leverage is great in a good market, but it's absolutely brutal in a bad one. And then you have the hidden running costs compounding that risk. People focus on the mortgage and the rent, but they forget to budget for rising property taxes, insurance hikes, and that ongoing maintenance fund.
It's that slow, steady bleed of capital.
It is. It's death by a thousand cuts. If you underestimate those costs, they can easily wipe out your entire profit margin. Sometimes you end up paying out of pocket just to keep the property afloat.
So the picture for the traditional buyer sounds pretty grim. A capital sinkhole with huge managerial demands. So I say, why is real estate still seen as the gold standard for so many? Here's where it gets really interesting. We shouldn't just dismiss the asset itself, should we?
No, not at all. Despite all of those structural problems, real estate has some undeniable inherent strengths.
Like what, specifically?
Well, for one, it's tangible. It's a physical asset you can actually see and touch, which gives you a kind of emotional security that paper assets just don't. And more importantly, it's often very stable over the long term. Historically, it's been a fantastic hedge against inflation.
Because rents and values tend to rise with the cost of living.
Exactly.
So the key conclusion here seems to be that the idea of real estate is solid, but the traditional way of owning it is maybe fundamentally broken for a modern investor.
That's the core tension. Success in the old model really depends on three things: picking a great location, committing for the very long term, like multiple economic cycles, and crucially, having the capital and the stamina to handle all the short-term headaches.
And if you're missing any one of those things?
If you're missing any of those, the investment stops being a wealth builder, and, well, it can quickly become a huge liability. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the reason this is all coming to a head now is that traditional property ownership just fails so badly when you compare it to the alternatives that modern investors have. What's fascinating here is how the data really shows you where those friction points are.
Right. When we look at that comparison table, it's so clear that modern investors are all about speed and flexibility. Let's start with liquidity.
Okay, so traditional real estate is definitively low liquidity. It just takes forever to sell. Now, compare that to stocks, ETFs, or even bonds. They're all high liquidity.
It can be in or out in minutes.
Seconds. Sometimes traditional real estate can't even come close to competing with that kind of speed.
And then there's the amount of work involved, yeah. The management side. The contrast is just stark.
It really is. Traditional property is high management. You're dealing with tenants, repairs, legal stuff. It takes up so much of your time.
Time you could be spending on other things.
Absolutely. And time is the one thing people value most now. These other asset classes, stocks, bonds, funds, they require low to no active management. I mean, it's the difference between working a stressful, unpaid second job and just collecting dividends.
And the last piece is accessibility.
Totally. Traditional real estate is limited. You need a huge pile of cash to even get in the door. Stocks and bonds, you can start with $100. So you put those three things together: low liquidity, high management, limited access. And it's obvious why people get so frustrated with the old way of doing things.
So we have this really great tangible asset, but it's handicapped by this outdated, clunky structure. The value is solid, but the execution is broken. So what does a fixed model even look like?
And this is where innovation finally steps in. The solution that directly targets these weaknesses is tokenized real estate. And this isn't just about making things digital. It's using technology to break the asset down into manageable, tradable pieces.
Okay, when you say tokenized, why is that better than, say, just owning a share in a REIT or a property fund? What's special about the token part?
The key is that tokenization uses the blockchain. That means it's secure, it's decentralized, and it's highly transparent. It basically combines the stability of physical property with the immediate trading you get with a digital asset. It fixes the big structural issues we just spent 10 minutes talking about.
It sounds like it just flips the three big drawbacks on their head.
It does. Tokenized models offer high liquidity because you're trading a digital token, not a physical deed. That can happen instantly. There's no management required for you, the investor, because the platform manages the properties professionally. And most importantly, you get high accessibility. It shatters that capital barrier by letting you own a fraction for a much lower entry price.
But hold on, doesn't tokenization introduce a whole new set of risks? You're relying on digital platforms, maybe new regulations. What about technical failures or platform risk? A brick-and-mortar building doesn't have that.
That's a critical question, and yeah, there's a trade-off. But the counter-argument is that while the digital layer adds new complexities, the underlying asset, the physical income-generating property, is still there.
It's still real.
It's still real. And the transparency of the blockchain is designed to cut down on risks like fraud or hidden fees, which are frankly everywhere in the traditional system. The whole point is to have secure, verifiable proof of ownership that links your digital token directly to that real-world asset.
That makes sense. Let's look at the specific example from our sources, Gamma Assets. How does their model actually make this shift happen?
So Gamma Assets uses this tokenization tech to let you own digital fractions of high-quality income-generating properties. They handle buying the property, putting it in the right legal structure, and then they create secure digital tokens that represent ownership stakes in it.
So as the investor, I get the benefit of the property's value going up, and I get a piece of the rental income, but I don't have to deal with closing costs or tenant calls.
Precisely. They make the transaction part feel more like trading any other digital asset. You can buy and sell these property-backed tokens right from a dashboard or an app.
Yeah.
It dramatically cuts the entry costs, boosts liquidity, and gets rid of the management headache completely.
And you mentioned the blockchain security aspect.
Yes. That transparency is a huge upgrade from the old paper-based system. It means no hidden fees popping up, no waiting months for deeds to transfer, and crucially, no surprise, maintenance bills demanding your immediate cash and attention. The investment becomes purely about the financial return.
So what does this all mean? It seems like the debate over whether real estate is a bad investment is less about the asset itself and much more about whether the traditional, cumbersome method of owning it makes any sense anymore.
That's exactly the takeaway. Real estate itself isn't a bad investment. It's just an evolving one. Technology is turning its biggest historical weaknesses, illiquidity, high management, into strengths. It's making property investments simpler, faster, and truly accessible to everyone, not just people with huge pools of capital.
The era of real estate being this complicated, slow-moving asset,
yeah,
it feels like it's fading.
It is. So the final provocative thought for you to consider is this. The question is no longer, why is traditional real estate a bad investment? But rather, why would you invest in the traditional method at all? And as you look at your own portfolio, you should ask what other illiquid asset classes, maybe fine art, private equity, collectibles, could be transformed by the same technology in the near future.